we need to do a better job of extending a hand to them and saying, I've got you right now. I won't let you go through this alone. You are now a part of our community too.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Welcome to episode 70 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for unnecessary medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving with your loved one and your extended family. Now, prior to last week's conversation on gratitude, Christy and I discussed some of the misunderstandings about long-term care in episode 68. Reality versus Promises, Discerning the Differences in Long-Term Care. In this episode, we continue that conversation with a discussion on what nobody tells you about long-term care. And don't forget, we have insider information because Christy has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Christy, I've enjoyed our past conversations on long-term care and the expertise you bring to the show since you were actually a memory care director for several years. And I'm looking forward to learning more today about what they don't tell you about long-term care.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking about it, Mike, because I have a couple of clients who recently have made the move for their person into memory care. And in these two particular instances, there was just so much stuff that went sideways and could have been handled differently. And I realized the root cause was there's a lot of stuff nobody tells you about moving into long-term care. Professionals think that families know it, and families assume professionals are going to tell them. And that leaves a Grand Canyon size gap in knowledge and can lead to a really unpleasant experience all the way around.
Right. And it's such an overwhelming and emotional situation for a family to be moving a loved one into that situation. And then the professionals who do this every day, we fall into that trap too, even in the podcast here, where we've talked this language for years and on, yet we forget that the newbie or the new caregiver hasn't. And we have to kind of reset and remind ourselves that at times. So it'll be really great to hear these insider tips and help out future people or future partners who are care partners who are moving their loved ones into long-term care.
Yeah, I think that's right. And of course, for my clients, they have the added buffer of me there. It's interesting for me straddling both worlds where I find that I literally had both experiences. So I was thinking, are you kidding me? The community person didn't tell you this? Oh my God, I'm thinking this to myself. And then I got a question from the family and I don't remember what it was, but I was thinking, oh, you didn't know that? Huh. Oh, yeah, I guess you wouldn't. So I do understand from both sides of it. And you make the great point of no matter what we do, when we're inside our own little bubble, we forget what it's like for people outside the bubble, and we need to reach a hand out and pull them along with us and make sure that we're on the same page.
Just tell me, remember, you've had several family members with dementia. Have you been part of the process of helping them move into a long-term care situation?
Yes.
Okay, so just for our listeners, you have actually run a long-term memory care situation, and you have actually been the care partner of someone helping them to relocate. So
that, yes,
that's when you bridge the gap, and now as a consultant and, you know, helping other care partners, now you're helping bring that knowledge from both sides. I think that's just an incredible opportunity for people to take advantage of.
I think that a lot of times my knowledge and experience is very helpful for families where they can, of course, talk to me about, you know, their feelings and what they're going through, but also to bounce off of me like, this is what I'm thinking about this situation. Am I coming out of left field or is this normal or not? And I think it's really reassuring for families to have that gauge.
Exactly. So what would you say the number one thing that nobody tells you about long-term care is?
Well, I'd say it's hard to narrow it down to just one thing, but I guess my top two would be the emotional fallout for the family. And on a very practical, concrete note, it's not one-on-one care. And I think that often comes, that both of those things often come as a shock to families. On the emotional side, I see that families are really surprised by what they're feeling. They just didn't expect to be going through this gamut of emotions. So there's often a sense of loss because that daily companionship isn't there anymore. There's often guilt because care partners think they should have been able to do it all. There's often a sense of relief, which is very quickly followed by a sense of guilt for feeling a sense of relief, right?
Right.
There are all of these things going on. And then there's also the shock reaction. And that's probably, even when we do talk about the emotional fallout, a lot of times we gloss over the shock part of it, where it is, I think, difficult for people to even realize that's what's happening for them, that they're in shock that all of this has happened, because they just feel untethered. They don't feel grounded or anchored into anything. It's like they're just free floating and don't know what to do.
Is that kind of come similar to when you experience loss of, you know, maybe a death or something?
I think so. I think so, because this is a loss too. It's a different type of loss, but it's still very much a loss, even if it is a desired thing. And what I mean by desired is because, of course, none of us want our person to have dementia, and we always want the very best for our person. So when we see that a memory care community would be the best fit for them, where we believe they're going to get the care and support that they need, that's a desired outcome, right? When our person passes and we feel like, whew, okay, now we feel like they are no longer going through this. We're not seeing them struggle anymore. So that, in that sense, can be a desired outcome too. And it's just tough.
Or you come home and they're not there. You're used to them being there. You're used to that daily hug and interaction. And
right.
Now it's not as easy to get, and it's not, it's a whole different part of your life has totally changed again.
Yeah, it has. And at the same time, I wouldn't want to minimize. I know many care partners are in a situation where their person is rather advanced. And let's say they're at that phase where they're shadowing, which is where your person is following you wherever you go from room to room, because they've lost that sense of object permanence and you are the center of the universe that drives all of their actions, makes the magic happen. So they will follow you into the bathroom. They'll stand next to you when you're loading the dishwasher. They'll stand next to you when you're putting clothes in the dryer. They're just always there. And for a lot of care partners, that can feel just smothering, right? And yet when their person moves into memory care and they're not there anymore, they still feel that sense of loss, that difference of their person not being there anymore. So I think the emotional fallout is something that we as professionals could definitely talk more about and let families know that this is going to happen for them so that they don't feel like, oh my gosh, I must be the only one.
You know, I have never heard anyone or read anything about that shock element of it. And that makes a lot of sense. I could have guessed you'd mentioned the different emotions, but shock was something, well, I was shocked by, and to hear you say, or surprised maybe. So that's just a very interesting, that's good understanding to know. And that's a totally acceptable thing for our care partners to go through. All of these are acceptable emotions, and hopefully our care partners, you know, recognize and understand that and give themselves, you know, cut themselves some slack. But so even if they were told that and they were ready for that, of course, I believe you've talked about before, it still washes over you, and it's, you know, it's not like you can prevent any of that, but you can maybe be a little more prepared by having support system around you.
I think one of the best ways you can be prepared is just to know that this is normal and it's going to happen. And obviously, I would love to be able to completely fix it, but that's not how it works. So I always tell my folks, I will never try to talk you out of your feelings, because feelings just are. There's no right or wrong. And the easiest way to get through something, your feeling, is to go through it, not try to bury it, hide it, squish it, pretend it doesn't exist. We just need to go through it. And then we make it to the other side.
So, Christy, I know some communities have support groups, and that would probably be also a good idea for a care partner to consider being part of. And because I think a lot of the people in that support group, if it's on the premises of a long-term memory care community, they probably have loved ones in that same community, or there's some, at least some of the members.
Absolutely. So there are, you know, depending on the community, there are various resources available right there on site. And then certainly all of them are able to give you information about where else to find other resources that are still in your local area or that you can easily access online. The reason I mention the emotional fallout is because there are all of these other concrete things that nobody tells you about moving your person into long-term care. And it's all against the backdrop of you having this very emotional response. And when I do a lot of speaking, and some of it is to families and some of it is to professionals. And a few years ago, I spoke with the Oregon Healthcare Association. The topic was dealing with difficult families. That was the title of the talk. And I had, I don't know, it was 350, 380 people in there. It was standing room only. People were lined up in the back of the room and against the walls, because this is such an issue inside communities where and my point to the team, to the professionals in the room was, this is what families are going through. You label them difficult, but they are going through this highly emotional experience where yet again, the rug has been pulled out from under them. And you can plan for a move all you want and know that this is the right choice for your family. It still feels like the rug has been pulled out from under them. And they've been through this series of losses, what feels like continuously, by the time they get to the point where the person is moving in. And labeling them difficult doesn't help. We need to do a better job of extending a hand to them and saying, I've got you right now. I won't let you go through this alone. Here's what to expect. Here are resources I have for you. Here's my number. We're here for you. You are now a part of our community too.
And that term, difficult, I was happy you addressed it as a label, because it's exactly the same thing we say not to do to the person living with dementia, because It's a negative. It puts a negative connotation on it, and it makes us miss the point, which you've just nicely described, is to actually help them through it. And I think, you know, of course, there's going to be that one or two people that really are difficult, and there's just no way around it, right?
But those folks have differing lifestyle values,
right?
So they're not a fit.
right. But the majority of care partners who are going through this just don't know what to expect. They didn't know these emotions were going to come on. They didn't know that they were going to feel this way and it was going to be so hard. And it is up to us professionals to help prepare them as best as possible and guide them through that. So I'm happy you're meant talking about it like that. So Christy, at that conference that you spoke at, I imagine you were able to help many of these professionals see it from your view of, and that's just another incredible thing, because again, you're helping, not only are you helping care partners through this difficult journey, but you're also helping educate the professionals to see it in a much better way as well.
I think genuinely everybody who works in long-term care wants to help people.
Exactly.
They have a desire to help people. And because no matter what the role is, whether it's social services or nurse or a business office manager, dietary, you can find other jobs outside of long-term care where you can still do the same type of work, just in a completely different setting. So I think that people that are called into long-term care do genuinely want to help. Often they just don't have the tools or the experience or the knowledge to be really effective at it. And so that's why we go to conferences, is so that we can learn and become better.
Right. And they're human too. They have their own lives. They have their own emotional struggles. Not trying to bail them out, but we all need to work together, and we've talked to kind of about that before. So I think that's just an excellent, excellent points you've made, Christy. Talking about, I want to get on to the one-on-one care, if you don't mind.
Yeah, none at all.
So when I attended support groups as an observer, because I've never actually had a loved one with dementia, there were several care partners in there at different times that I could see we're struggling with the fact that their loved one wasn't getting one-on-one care. And that was causing a lot of grief with them and struggles. And then they were also causing a little stir within the community and the professionals themselves, because their expectations were so high.
Right. And I think this is a fairly easy thing for professionals to fix, is we just make sure straight out of the gate before a move-in happens that the family understands that we don't provide one-on-one care in memory care. And in fact, there's no area of long-term care that automatically provides one-on-one care. In the hospital or in different levels of long-term care, you may see a person with one-on-one care, and that is because either the family has hired a private caregiver to be with their person, to spend more time with their person, or because the community has told the family that they need to hire a one-on-one person. My point being, no community is going to provide one-on-one care. That is not the model. And so if your person was living with you at home and you were doing everything yourself, you were providing one-on-one care, that may be your subconscious expectation that that's what it's going to be like in long-term care. And you don't realize until your person is moved in and you go to visit that that is not the case, that even was your subconscious expectation. So some memory cares obviously are better than others, just like anything else in life, right? My favorite memory care, when I was memory care director, we had an excellent ratio. So we had one staff member for every six people. And that is almost unheard of these days. The best I've seen in several years now is 1 to 7. And that's pretty rare. It's more typically 1 to 10. So that's something to ask about. And we've talked about that in previous episodes about why you would use a placement consultant to get things like that straightened out. And certainly if you are working with a placement consultant or somebody like me, you definitely should be told that no, it's not one-on-one care.
So Christy, when a family tours a community, then they can kind of observe the ratio happening, right? Because if there's one staff member for every 10 residents, then it's going to kind of be obvious that there's not one-on-one care happening.
They can. Typically, families are more interested in other things. That's not usually something that they're on the lookout for. So usually they want to make sure that the room or apartment has the view that they desire, or that the community looks nice and smells good. So usually they're not very tuned into staffing ratios, but that's certainly something that should be posted. And again, that doesn't mean that a family is going to be tuned into that during a tour,
right?
But it is a good question to ask.
Right. Well, now that they hear this podcast, they might be more aware to tune into that and just kind of pay attention on how those interactions are going and if that's fits within their expectations.
Absolutely.
And desires, you know. So,
right.
Because maybe the expectations can't actually be met because we want that one-on-one.
It could be. And that, again, that's where it's great to have a professional, not a professional that works inside the community, but a different professional, like a placement consultant, who can help you sort out, well, what's realistic and what's not realistic.
Right.
And then, of course, like anything in life, if you have the financial resources to make it the way you want it, you can definitely do that.
Right. And speaking of that, which it can get quite expensive, as we know, you mentioned that some communities let families have or hire an outside professional come in to provide more one-on-one care within that community?
Oh, yeah. Communities will always do that. We'll always allow a family to hire private caregivers, for sure.
Okay. I wasn't necessarily aware of that. Okay. Well, that's so the two top things we've talked about are the emotional fallout and that there's no such thing as one-on-one care in there unless you bring in your own professional caregiver. Any other things that no one tells you about long-term care?
Oh, there's a whole list. So visiting hours, that isn't often covered. Pharmacy services. Some families think, for example, that they still need to be running to Walgreens to pick up prescriptions, when in fact, long-term care communities use what's called an institutional pharmacy. And what that means is they have a massive pharmacy service. Some of them are nationwide, some are regional, where they put medications in what are called blister packs. So it's very easy to count out the medication. So it's very regulated. And then the staff takes care of ordering medications for you and refills and all of that. So that is something that if you work in long-term care, you know that's a thing that exists and that's just how it's done. If you're a family, you're completely unaware of that. And so, you know, as a client recently asked me, well, my mom had an appointment, the doctor wrote a prescription, and when we came back, I told the med aide about it, and she said, oh yeah, we got it. And I said, okay, but I'm going to run to Walgreens and get it. And she said, no, we already took care of it. So my question is, how did they even know? And second, how do I know that they actually did take care of it? And I thought these were really reasonable questions, because you don't know what you don't know, right?
Exactly.
So what happens is the doctor's office, the medical assistant in the doctor's office, had already faxed the order over to the community, and the med tech saw it and forwarded that fax on to the pharmacy. and the pharmacy delivers, and that's that. Now, a family is not going to be notified that a prescription was filled, because in long-term care, we do what's called charting by exception, which means if everything's going the way it should be going, we don't make a note of it. If it isn't, if it's exceptional, then we make a note of it. So we would make a note that Joe's medication did not arrive in time for the evening med pass. Pharmacy arrived late at, you know, 2 a.m. And it was a non-essential, you know, it wasn't a life-threatening situation. So we waited until the morning med pass to start administering that medication. Things like that.
I see.
You just wouldn't know if you don't work in long-term care.
Right. And I see that that would be, it's a great service once you have trust that it's in place and working. Because the first time you're going to be like your client was, you know, confused by it. But once you know that there's that handshake in there, if you will, between the doctor's office and the long-term care facility or community, then that's a good thing. You mentioned visiting hours. You mean I can't just show up at any time I want to see my loved one?
Now, see, this is highly dependent on each community and in the United States, regulations from state to state. So it really depends. And they used to, years ago, tell people after their person moved into memory care, well, you shouldn't visit for a month. Or then you shouldn't visit for 2 weeks. Or you need to let them get adjusted. And that is not legal. You can't keep a person from seeing their family. So now, and some communities do have set visiting hours, others don't. So, for example, in my memory care, this is what I said to families. You are welcome to come anytime. If you come before breakfast, what you're going to find is a lot of folks who need assistance, and they're getting that assistance, and they're getting up for the day, they're using the restroom, they're getting cleaned up, they're getting dressed, and they're going to make their way into the dining room. It's not a time to have a conversation with staff, because there are folks who need assistance, and that's what we're going to be concentrating on. So if you want to stop by on your way to work to have coffee with your mom, that's great. We'll make sure that there's coffee. There's always coffee in the morning. But please don't expect your mom to have her hair done and her lipstick on and to be dressed and ready for the day, because that's probably not going to be the case. And if she has a roommate, it needs to be okay with the roommate too, because you're walking in the morning before she's ready to go for the day.
Because generally people don't have their own room, right? There's usually double occupancy.
It really depends on the community.
Okay.
So some places there are semi-private, some are private. It really depends. So that was one example. Another thing that I would tell folks is, you know, likewise, if you want to come by in the evening, please feel free to do that and understand, depending on what time in the evening, you know, like 8 p.m., 9 p.m., you're probably not going to be able to have a conversation with staff unless you don't mind waiting. And it could be for an extended period of time, because folks are wanting to get ready for bed. And some people shower in the evenings and they need assistance with that. And that's what we're going to be oriented to, is helping the people who live here, because we work where they live. That's why we're here. So that is not going to be a great time to have a conversation. Should you come visit at 2 a.m.? Well, if your dad has always been a night owl or used to work the night shift, and now it's just totally normal for him to be up at 2 a.m. and you're the same and you want to come visit, that's totally fine. Again, it cannot be to the detriment of any of the neighbors. So it's not okay to play loud music at 2 a.m.
Right,
it's totally okay to go into, you know, if your person has a private apartment, sure, no problem. If your person, you know, if you want to walk down to the living room together or into the dining room, whatever, sure, totally fine. Just can't be to the detriment of other people. And so, you know, really, in memory care, it's a neighborhood. It's a community. This is where people live. And so just like in our own neighborhood, don't do something you wouldn't do in your own neighborhood. Right?
So, Christy, I'm sure there's probably dozens of these things that no one tells you about long-term care that we could cover, but we're out of time. And do you have any resources on DementiaSherpa.com or a list? Or?
Oh, yeah. There is an article about it. And actually, at the end of that article, there is a link to the email course called How to Be an Effective Advocate for Your Person. And that's free, of course. So you can see all the other things that people don't tell you about moving into long-term care. And then you can also sign up for that email course, which is free. If your person has moved into long-term care and it's not going as swimmingly as you would hope, or this is something that you're planning for in the future and you just want to be an effective advocate for your person. I created the course, so of course I'm going to say it's fantastic, but I was just looking it over again yesterday and I was like, wow, I was kind of impressed. I was like, that's some good stuff there, Christy. So
if you haven't signed up for one of Christy's resources, you're doing yourself an injustice, in my opinion, because there's very few people as articulate and wise on the dementia topic, in my opinion, and with the empathy and compassion that Christy has. So I highly recommend it to our care. You're welcome. I highly recommend it to our listeners out there to get on her newsletter, to check out her resources, to email her, ask questions, and just educate yourself and empower yourself to know how to, you know, journey, take this journey. And that's why we call this navigating rough terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, because she's really great at it. So be sure to check out the show notes, and I'll have links to the article there. And Christy, any last thoughts before we conclude today?
Yeah, I would just say to our care partners listening, please be kind to yourself. When you're moving your person into long-term care, it's going to be an adjustment for them, but they will have staff around them 24/7 to help them make that adjustment. You won't. So please ask yourself, what is the kindest, most loving thing you can do for yourself? And then do it.
That's great advice, Christy. Thanks again, and I look forward to our conversation next week.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode70. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, you can do so there, so that way you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. Bye-bye. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.